ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back. Thank you for joining us. Henrik here with RedIce.tv and RedIceMembers.com. Do get a membership. It supports us, helps us to fight back against censorship and the way that the elite, the establishment, trying to shut us down right now. So thank you for considering that. So today we have a great show lined up for you guys. We have Zach Voorhees on the show, who, of course, famously, I'm sure everyone out there knows you, Zach, the insider, that is a former senior engineer at Google. That decided to speak out, became a whistleblower, jump ship, and talk about the internal, the meddling, the censorship, and all kinds of things that's happened on the inside. So welcome, Zach. Yeah, it's good to have you here.
Thank you, Henrik. It's good to be on the show.
Thank you so much. So bring us up to speed. I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that are familiar with the story and whatnot, but give us the skinny version, if you can, of actually what happened and kind of your path, your trajectory, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, so I had the dream job. I was a senior software at Google. I was working on a really great project, which was to bring YouTube to the television sets around the world. And that's what I was doing. But then in 2016, right after Trump won the election, Google decided that they were going to radically change the company. And they were going to start censoring what they called fake news and basically controlling the information landscape of the entire internet. And, you know, at first they said that they were going to do this, and then they started to implement it, and then it started to get rolled out. People started to complain about that on the YouTube channels. And I just started feeling this, you know, intense guilt, because this wasn't something that we, the employees, could necessarily stop, even though we tried. Google kept on marching, and it started to become clear that this was part of an agenda. And so there was a point which I caught Google deleting words out of their Arabic translation dictionary in order to make a Trump tweet sound crazy. And that's when I realized that this was more than censorship. This was a company that was willing to act seditiously and treasonously against a duly elected president of the United States. And it wasn't because I necessarily liked Trump. This would have happened if it was under a different president. And I decided that I couldn't remain silent anymore, that I had to come forward. And so I did. And I doxed Google. I gave 950 pages of their internal documents to the Department of Trust, Department of Justice Antitrust Division. And I also gave 950 pages to Project Veritas. And we were able to disclose the censorship apparatus of what Google was doing to the American public. And so we were able to take conspiracy theory and turn it into conspiracy fact.
Yeah, that's right. Huge story, of course, when that came out. Very, very necessary to get someone on the inside to speak up against this, because Google have been doing a lot of bad things for a long time. I remember that the Breitbart video that came out too the day after the election.
Oh yeah.
You had the upper the upper management of Google emotionally getting involved and saying, we're going to use the power that we have of this company to make things, that the right things happen now after Trump. You remember that?
Yeah. I mean, the founder of the company was saying that he was personally offended by the election of Donald Trump. And I was kind of taken aback by that, because that's not something that the CEO of a company should necessarily be saying. But what really disturbed me was what the Sundar Pichai, the CEO of Google, he said that what Google needed to do was combat fake news by using its machine learning algorithms. And I thought to myself, wait a minute, machine learning algorithms to, you know, tone down fake news. And I started wondering to myself, well, who decides what fake news is? Because if there's fake news, someone's got to decide as an arbiter, okay, this is fake and it needs to be censored. And so this started sort of a journey through the publicly available internal documents that I had access as a full-time employee. And what I started to discover was that their definition of fake news included actual events that had happened. And that's when I realized, wow, this is not about necessarily getting rid of fake news. This is about controlling the narrative. And so I just started searching. And what I found was that this fake news was going to be classified by a project called machine learning fairness. And that once this machine learning fairness algorithm was applied to any website on the internet, it could determine whether it was something that would need to be pushed up to the top of the rankings or whether it was something that was going to be considered fake news and then buried. And so what I saw was, you know, this machine learning fairness being rolled out to Google Search, Google News, and also to YouTube video rankings. And what was really sad was Google was using deception to sort of throw people off of the trail of this program. And the way that they did that is they released what I believe was a fake censorship project called Project Dragonfly. And everyone's like, oh my God, Project Dragonfly, figure out something about Project Dragonfly. And when I searched, there was nothing there. It was like nothing. Yet I saw this huge thing with machine learning fairness. And it was like this project that was backed by Stanford. There was like a list of authors and theoreticians that were, you know, forming the design documents for this stuff. And I was telling my friends, I'm like, I can't find anything on Project Dragonfly, but I can find all this stuff on machine learning fairness. I think this is deception. And so, this machine learning fairness, it's huge. It's been in development for probably around a decade. And if you think about it, you know, is Google going to name it censorship project like some like big scary insect, or are they going to call it like some SJW term like fairness? Like, how can you be against fairness is the way they're trying to position it. But in reality, it's that fairness is the Trojan horse in which they can take our rights away.
Yeah, they use it in that term, as you say, is like say that we, since we've discovered unfairness, right, in the real world or whatever, it's up to us, Google, as a company, to make sure that we stabilize that. We make things fair, right? So this is, they're justifying it, and they're actually thinking that this is just doing something good. It's not nefarious from their point of view. I think most of the people working there are probably like, yeah, this is great, because we're just making the world a better place, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, they're trying to make the world a more fair and equitable place. And what they actually said in their design documents was that objective reality is unfair.
That's right. I remember that.
And so specifically, this is the example that they used. They said, let's say that someone was doing an image search for the word CEO, and the majority of searches that were returned included male CEOs. Even if this was objectively real, it can still be considered algorithmic unfairness and justify intervention via product intervention. Now, if Google is saying that objective reality is unfair, then what they're saying is that we're going to create our own version of fair. We're going to enthrust our own corporate values into American culture. And that was really scary, because whenever that's been tried before, like it's called communism, right? That results in a really bad situation where millions have died. You know, you have the Bolshevik Revolution that killed 30 million Russians after the World War II. You also had the thing that happened in Cambodia, where something like 30 to 50% of the population died. You had the Cultural Revolution in China, which killed around 70 million people. And I've gone to China to manufacture, and you know, it's not something that people necessarily try to like say that didn't happen. They're just like, oh, we don't talk about that because that's a period of shame and regret. And so
this is what you're talking about right here. 100 years of communism and 100 million dead. Of course, Google isn't communism. It's a private company that have interfaces, of course, with the government. But it comes now in the this is the new what I think we need to convey is people have no idea how much power these companies actually hold. Right. We're in a completely new era in terms of what they can do, how they can manipulate, how we just with subtle little changes in their algorithms, you can get people to believe, you know, completely opposite or differently or stuff like that. So you don't have a you know, takeover of the government per se, but you have so much power in the hands of these companies, and they're going to push their way. And as you say, the road to hell is always paved with good intentions. And so here we are, right?
You know, and what's really ironic about this whole thing is the founder, Sergey Brin, fled Soviet totalitarianism. And he came to America, and he used our freedom in order to prosper and become unimaginably wealthy. And what does he do with that as soon as he gets a position of power? He turns around and slams the gate shut and tries to put everyone into the same type of totalitarian system that he fled from.
Yep, that's right.
You know, this is the biggest irony of it, is that these people should know better. So, you know, this is the situation that we're in. It's an ancient fight. We have to, like, you know, now we've got to fight this again, because freedom isn't free. It takes people fighting with their blood in order to pass it on to the next generation. And this is essentially the same situation that we find ourselves in today.
Absolutely. I was looking for that clip. We can show a little bit of that later, but actually we could play part of that now just to get people up to speed in terms of, like, I mean, I'm personally also very interested in YouTube and what they're doing, how they're kind of reworking this right now, because, you know, we've suffered, of course, from censorship. We had our channel shut down. We had about 335,000 subscribers. We were not given any reason. So this is, of course, very important. We have a personal dog in the fight here, of course. But just so people kind of understand what we're looking at, I'm trying to find that one here, this one. Let's check this one out. It's a couple of minutes. We can get your comments on this, too. But it's about, begins with Ted Cruz talking to one of the Google kind of, I think she's head of responsible technology or something like that. Anyway, we'll play this.
Do you think it's Google's job to, quote, prevent the next Trump situation?
Thank you, Senator. I don't agree with that. No, sir.
2020 is certainly on top of, now my old organization, Trust and Safety, is top of mind. They've been working on it since 2016 to make sure we're ready for 2020.
Do you think it's Google's job to make sure, quote, somebody like Donald Trump never comes to power again?
No, sir, I don't think that is Google's job. And we build for everyone, including every single religious belief, every single demographic, every single region, and certainly every political affiliation.
No.
We've had a lot of questions today, clarifying, we apply our policies fairly and without political bias. All creators are held to the same standard.
We used the 80-plus YouTube channels listed by Rebecca Lewis in her report on alternative influence networks on YouTube as a starting point. These are influential alt-right channels that push reactionary views, a general opposition to feminism, social justice, or left-wing politics, from mainstream versions of libertarianism and conservatism, all the way to overt white nationalism. Using a random sample of 3.6 million videos over the last month, we counted the number of times that a video from one of these channels was recommended by YouTube. Our preliminary results are stunning. For the first 2 weeks of February, YouTube was recommending videos from at least one of these major alt-right channels on more than one in every 13 randomly selected videos, 7.8%. From February 15th, this number has dropped to less than one in 250, 0.4%. Conclusion. YouTube used a politically motivated report, one that was produced by left-wing activists at Data and Society, an organization partially financed by mainstream media outlets like New York Times and George Soros' Open Society Foundation. YouTube implemented site-wide changes that targeted all the channels listed in the report. The end result was a shocking drop in viewers and new subscribers, as none of the videos by these creators go out to new viewers' recommended feeds, preventing these channels from organic growth. The algorithm was intentionally altered to punish those with political views that the directors and employees at YouTube don't agree with. This is blatant censorship, and it's a lie that YouTube apply their policies fairly and without political bias. At youtube.com/yt/about. We can read, under freedom of opportunity, we believe everyone should have a chance to be discovered, build a business and succeed on their own terms, and that people, not gatekeepers, decide what's popular. This is a lie. YouTube is a joke that have trampled all over their own company policy. Under freedom of expression, it says, We believe people should be able to speak freely, share opinions, foster open dialogue, and that creative freedom leads to new voices, formats, and possibilities. And under the heading freedom of information, they go on with the lies. We believe everyone should have easy, open access to information, and that video is a powerful force for education, building understanding, and documenting world events, big and small. YouTube has lost all credibility. Google has ruined YouTube by turning the platform into a publisher of politically motivated propaganda. It's just a matter of time before alternatives begin to seriously outcompete YouTube.
All right, so there you go. That's a little clip right there that summarizes.
Did you guys make that? That was great.
Yeah, we have that's a small clip from one of the videos called Google, the monster that has to be destroyed. And it's not lost. We have it backed up. It's on other channels and stuff. But yeah, that's one of the popular videos at around 100,000 views that was nuked with the channel, you know?
Wow. Did you have a backup on BitChute?
Yep, we do. And we had, there's altcensoredaswell.com. They have backups. We had local backups. We have a member site where we host everything ourselves and stuff. So we're fine on that front. That's not an issue. But the issue, of course, Zach, is to our ability to reach new people. And despite this, we saw on their own mission statement pages, they blatantly discriminate against viewpoints that they don't agree with. Right? Tell us more about that.
Yeah, so there's this program within YouTube. It was called Viacom. And what it would do is it would listen into every single video that you uploaded and transcribe it into a text file. That text file was then data mined and keywords were chosen. And if you use certain keywords, you would get your video immediately demonetized. Because what Google's leadership said is that it was brand unsafe. And so you've probably notice that yourself. You may have watched Tim Pool, because Tim Pool's like an excellent person to watch about what's censored or not, because he knows what's censored. And so he'll dance around these little keyword terms because he knows that if he says it, it will get transcribed and then his video will get instantly demonetized and he essentially gives it away for free. And that's the way that they do it. I've watched this classifier run on a bunch of different videos. I've watched it run on your videos. And anyone within the company, if they've got a bone to pick with a content creator, can hit the manual review and they can trigger a manual review cycle if they want to see, you know, a video get removed or demonetized or, you know, even get the whole site, you know, get them a strike or get them removed.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there's a fast track committee that will go through that you can submit stuff to that will have them remove an entire channel. And for what you guys saw with your channel, I would guess that it wasn't just like a routine, you know, banning. It was a group of people sitting around, you know, with a collection of videos that you guys had. They took a look at them and then quickly made the decision, okay, this whole thing needs to go away. And that's what happened to your channel. And it's really ironic because, you know, Google prides themselves on being diverse and inclusive. In fact, they talk about it in the company all the time about how diverse and how inclusive that they are. But then when it comes to actually practicing that, they are in reality a monoculture that is not diverse. It's not inclusive. In fact, it's exclusivory. I don't even know how to say that word, exclusivory. But they exclude, you know, content that they deem not good, that they deem objectionable. And so this is what they're doing. And I just sent you a video that, you know, is from the ADL. Actually,
yeah, I was going to mention that just now, but let's play that one that you had. Is it this one from JR?
From Eric Schmidt. That's actually a really good one too, but I think it's slightly a little bit this one, Susan. Yes, one. The CEO of YouTube. Hit that.
All right.
This is a hard area. You know, a year ago we didn't have the term fake news. Now everything is about fake news. We hear about it every single day. It's had a lot of concerns about how it affected the election, how it affects politics, News is important to us. We are a platform with global distribution. We talked about the number of users that are coming to us. We have some responsibility to make sure that we are delivering the news when something important happens in the world, when there's a crisis. We think people could benefit from this news. So it's, news has always been important to YouTube. We also see people in locations like Syria where their traditional news organizations can't get to, and people are talking about citizen journalism coming out of Syria.
The white helmets.
So what are we doing? Basically, this sounds easy, but it's really hard to do. We're pushing down the fake news, we're demoting it, and we are increasing the authoritative news and promoting it. How do we do that? We have a whole system. We came up with trashy news where we have built classifiers, we identify it, we look for salacious, for clickbait, content that isn't, that we don't think is the authoritative news. It's just kind of encouraging people to look at, but it's not true. We're training, we added these instructions to our raters, and we've updated our classifiers, and we are working to understand, identify that with machine learning, and then to push that down. And then we're increasing our authoritative news. We're doing that with things like a breaking news shelf. We're triggering it in the US, in France, in the UK, and more countries coming soon, where we have sources that come from reputable sources. We work with Google News on that to define what those reputable sources are. It triggered last week in the London Bridge attacks. It's also going to trigger on search. When you type in something, you're looking for a news event, you're going to see news there. We're also working with a lot more news publishers. News publishers don't want to be in the technical business of running their own player. We can do that for them. And we also want to get more news players on the platform. We have the goal of getting over 100 new news providers on our platform this year.
All right. So, I mean, what made YouTube great? I mean, I know that they're rebranding. I know now that they're trying to turn it into something which it wasn't from the beginning, but it's in the name, right? I mean, YouTube, it was everyone out there that can have their voices heard. It's the interesting perspective you won't get on cable TV or in news shows that's on the mainstream and stuff. They have completely flipped on that now, and now it's their responsibility to disseminate information from the authoritative sources, the globalists out there, right?
Right. You know, it's called YouTube, but now they're acting like it's their tube.
It's them tube, yeah. Yeah.
It's them tube, right? Yeah. And what you see now is, I mean, YouTube was great. It was introducing me to all kinds of different knowledge that I didn't know existed. But now when I go to anyone's page and I look at their newest video, let's say Red Pill 78, which I listen to often, what happens is that the next up algorithm will now select Fox News almost without hesitation. It's just Fox News, Fox News, Fox News, Fox News. You know, Tim Pool, Fox News, Fox News. And the thing is that they're trying to funnel us back into the mainstream media narrative.
Yeah.
And it's you know, Fox News is now owned by Disney, so they've been starting to kind of go off the rails with their narrative. And they want to make sure that, you know, if we're going to listen to someone on the right, that's going to be something that is by Conservative Incorporated, essentially.
Yeah.
Conservative Inc.
Yeah.
And they're always trying to get us back onto there. And what's happening is there is a revolution of the mind that's happening. And what we've kind of woken up to and realized is that the people that have been lying to us are the exact same players every single time. The Wall Street Journal, ABC News, CNN, MSNBC, PBS. These are now being recognized as mouthpieces of the elite. And some people say deep state, and some people say the network of global corporate control. But in the end, it's actually all just the same thing. It's, you know, 0.001% of the population, you know, they own a lot of media assets. The assets that you see here on the list represent that, and it represents the accurate view of what Google thinks the trustworthiness of these websites, like the Wall Street Journal, like ABC News, like PBS NewsHour. And so these are the news sources that they're declaring are authoritative. And if you don't fall into this, like let's say you're Breitbart News, then you're going to get a really low score. You know, RT America, same thing.
I'm surprised they're even on there, actually, but they are nonetheless.
Yeah, they are nonetheless, you know. And what's really amazing is that their scores don't get affected with the more that we find out how much they're misinforming the public. Like, what did Project Veritas just disclose yesterday? It disclosed that ABC News spiked the story of Jeffrey Epstein and that they had all of the information that's coming out now 3 years ago. I mean, this is the most prolific pedophile in the history of America. And ABC News had the full story and they killed it. They spiked it.
That's right.
You know?
Because they're protecting their own as well. They're people that approach them, from Dershowitz to all these other people inside of these networks and stuff. I mean, they're protecting each other. And that's the reasoning here. And she even admitted it in the clip that came out, that like she's convinced he was killed. He didn't commit suicide. And again, after that, she started backpedaling, right? And she was like, oh, well, I didn't mean that or whatever. But I think that's the truth, what she revealed in that clip, you know?
Yeah, the cat's out of the bag. I just sent you a really interesting thing that I noticed about fake news. This will kind of blow some people's minds. And I want people that watch this to kind of know about this trendy little tool called trends.google.com. Oh my God, it's a bombshell of information if you just want to know where to look. And you can get a lot of information on what people in whole are searching for. What I have right here is I went to trends.google.com and I put in the term Pizzagate and I put in the term fake news. What you're going to see is that Pizzagate came out, then all of a sudden the media is like, fake news. Oh my God, fake news, fake news, fake news. That's the reason why the fake news came on, was because they didn't want the whole Epstein thing coming out. And it's coming out, they can't stop it. And what's mind-blowing is how many people are connected to Epstein. And this guy was running a blackmail operation on politicians, celebrities, and other influencers on a scale that can only be described as nation-state scale. And, you know, I keep on getting surprised by where his tentacles reach into. There is someone that I've been talking to since yesterday. Her name is Rachel something. I can't remember her name. She was a candidate for the Transhumanist Party. It's like the party that wants to put like cyborg implants and make us live forever. And she was in there for a total of 2 months and discovered that the people running the Transhumanist Party were paid by Epstein. Okay? It's like amazing coincidence. This obscure political party was also controlled by Epstein in the same way that Hollywood was controlled by Epstein, by a way that, you know, all these scientists at MIT and Cornell University were all, you know, being on the dole of Epstein.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that came out with his... I forget who reported on that, but he wanted to seed humanity, right, with his own seed stuff.
Yeah.
He did inject, I mean, a lot of money into various groups, no matter how fringe they were or whatever, but he had very bizarre plans, supposedly, right? But so his stuff is everywhere. It was linked into so many different groups, so many different elitist organizations, and he knew so many people. As you said, he blackmailed so many people that it's totally understandable that they will first of all cover for him for years and years, like they've done with other individuals in the past, like Jimmy Savile over in the UK, right? He kind of got away with it for years too. BBC covered it up and stuff like that. But you know, Epstein, he was definitely taken out to stop that the ongoing court case that was happening, you know,
either to stop it or to prevent someone from challenging the search orders, right? Like if you want to search a property, then someone with standing can get in the way. And the theory that I've heard is that he was taken out, and I believe he's still alive. I believe that it was a controlled exchange. I don't think that he was acting alone. I think that he was an agent of a nation state. And as soon as he was gone, all of a sudden you saw police on his property. And I believe that they were executing search warrants. And I believe at this point that the military or the powers that be that are pro-American have all the different files that existed on his compound. Because from what I've heard, he was the procurer of blackmail material. And that if a politician wanted to go past the gatekeepers and become an influencer, then he had to produce a blackmail file so that anytime the elites, the oligarchs that run the world, could just pull the plug. Because if this person went against their collective agenda, then they're like, well, we've got this on you. And at any point, we can just selectively start leaking things to the press. And so, you know, it's also rumored that this is what Hugh Hefner was doing, that he was producing all this blackmail. And so consider that if he was doing this for 3 decades, that he had 3 decades worth of blackmail on, you know, politicians. And what's really interesting is that with these like upper level elite people is that they're not necessarily selected for competence. They're selected for loyalty and their ability to be puppets. And as a result of that, you've got a lot of people that don't know, you know, the best security practices, and they surely don't supply or apply these security practices on their data. And so in, I think it was January of 2017, there was a raid on Epstein Island, and it was reported that there were 8 human traffickers that were arrested and something like 32 children that were rescued, which tells you a couple things. What it tells you is that they didn't expect that they were going to get raided, because if they would have, they would have, you know, taken those children, moved them to a different place. And that what that means to me is that if they didn't, they couldn't even hide the fact that they were having human children as slaves on the island, then that means that their ability to lock down their information was close to 0%, which means that, you know, whoever raided that now has full access to decades of information. If that's true, which I believe that it is, then what you see right now is what would be the result of that? Well, you know, what you see is you see major political change happening in the United States. You see a record number of politicians that are going down. You see a record number of CEOs that are stepping down. October of last month was the highest rate of CEO resignations that we've had possibly ever. I don't know. Can't remember exactly what the record was, but I think it was ever. Nike, Under Armour, and
who was that weird
left?
Huh? Yeah, they all. Who was that guy again? Overstocked. Did you see the interview that he did on the financial channel? Was it Fox Business?
Yeah, super weird, right?
It was super weird. Like, I don't know what the hell it was. He was working for the feds, and they had given him the information. He was asked certain things. It was tied into Peter Strzok, he said. I don't know if he's just cuckoo, the guy, but it seemed that he was involved in something. He seemed sincere in that regard.
Yeah, a lot of these puppets, you know, their strings have been cut, and they're kind of free right now. And a lot of them are still, you know, they have these blackmail files, and I believe that they're being used by the good guys in order to bring them on our side and dismantle this deep state that's had control of the United States since, well, largely after JFK was assassinated. But as I do research, I find out that they've had a grip on society for much longer than that, in fact. I found out that the United States was replaced by the United States Corporation in 1933, that they took over our Federal Reserve and captured our money system. So, you know, there's a large apparatus that's not representing we the people. It's representing a global elite that has their tentacles on the resources around the world.
Yeah.
And what's really interesting is that I've discovered that this elite is trying to create artificial scarcity in the world. And I came on this realization slowly, but it all happened after I discovered that Google was censoring a website that was reporting on the developments of a free energy device called Cold Fusion. And you may remember Cold Fusion back in like 1989. It was like the Pons-Fleischmann experiment. It came out.
Yeah.
There was this huge thing. Everyone's like, oh my God, Cold Fusion. It's this thing. And then boom.
It's a fraud. They faked it. We can't replicate it. Yeah, I remember the story. Yeah.
I mean, it was funny because I remember reading that, and they said we can't replicated in all the instances. And I'm like, wait a minute. So it's being replicated in some of the instances. Doesn't that mean that, you know, we've got something actionable and worth investigating? Well, it turns out that abundant energy is not something that the elites want, because it blows a hole in their carefully constructed narrative about how we're destroying the planet with our CO2 emissions. And if we can get rid of the CO2 emissions by simply moving away from, you know, an 18th century oil technology, then that's going to blow the hole in their whole carbon tax fraud. And what I found out was, so let me tell you how they got rid of this cold fusion website. Mm-hmm. So it was called e-catworld.com. And it was reporting on a scientist by the name of Andre Rossi with his ECAT.
I remember it. I think I covered it way back in the day when we covered some little bit more different topics. But yeah, very interesting. I mean, I don't know what to make of it, but very interesting nonetheless. Go ahead.
Yeah. So he had a series of tests that were done by in front of a third party inspector. And the paper was produced and published by Cornell University. And it was a 30-day test of like a 1 megawatt, you know, set of ECAT cells. And he was getting some traction, and this website popped up to just focus on his machine and how it was being productized and scaled up. And on October 2nd, 2017, this website mysteriously went down. And I found out about it because I just happened to go to this website quite a bit, because I was like, well, I think it's a hoax, but there's a lot of scientists that are producing some convincing stuff. So I was just going back normally, and all of a sudden this website announced that their .com had been removed from the Google index and instead was being shown on they could only show up on the results as a .org. But because they had lost all of their backlinks, they were no longer ranked very highly. And so people were having trouble finding them. And so I did a search for ecatworld.com. I discovered that they were on this blacklist. And this blacklist got introduced because of the Las Vegas shooting. Now, here's where it gets even weirder. And this is all disclosed in my 950-page documents. You can type Zach Voorhees and it will show you which one it is. But someone had created a fake URL that included search terms related to this Las Vegas shooting. And this term got added to this blacklist, and the site at the same time was taken off the index. Because according to Google, they were peddling fake conspiracy theories about the Stephen Paddock Las Vegas massacre. And so because they were peddling this, they decided to take the site down in its entirety. The problem with this is that this website does not report on any current events unless it has to do with cold fusion. So the URL that they were using for this blacklist was fake. And the result of this was that this was taken down. So I'm sitting here going, wait a minute, like obviously some elites don't like this guy. They don't want to see him succeed. And they're applying a very sophisticated hack to take him out. And so I said, well, in that case, I wonder if cold fusion could actually be real. And I said, well, if it can be real, then I'm going to come to a couple conclusions. One, Google is so big that they're going to hedge their bets and investigate this themselves, because they won't want this potential breakthrough coming through and surprising them, because this would be truly kind of a black swan event. And two, they're not going to want to tell anybody about this because it's going to contradict the narrative. So using those two predictions, I went out in search of Google's secret cold fusion laboratory. And I found it. Google had a secret laboratory studying cold fusion. I talked to the scientists, and I tried to get Google interested in Andre Rossi's cold fusion device. I was able to do an intro, but by the first conference, there was this, like, I'm not going to say his name because I don't want to draw like fire from his family, but
sure.
He was a pathological liar and he was a manipulator. And when I did background research, it turns out that he had, you know, he had ties to the CIA and the same people related to handling Tom DeLonge's disclosure project. And so, you know, he's part of this Cole family. And what he did was he was lying about the state of Andre Rossi's patents. He was like saying, oh, well, he doesn't have a patent. I was like, well, no, I've done my research. This is the patent. Here's the number. He's like, oh, well, it's not valid. I'm like, well, the patent's been passed through the patent system. Oh, well, it's not internationalized. I'm like, no, it's internationalized. Here's the patent for France. Here's the patent for Britain. Here's the patent for Italy. And, you know, after the end, I was like, why is this guy like not even wanting to like, you know, investigate this? Because, you know, let's say that the chance of a $5 trillion invention is 5%. The payout of that 5% is incredible. You're going to want to at least investigate it. So for this irrational behavior to not even want to investigate this guy, I was like, okay, something's going on here. And I couldn't figure out what was going on. I had to think through it for a couple of months and I started to realize, oh no, they don't want, the people in control don't want this abundance because what they've done is that they've developed their script of social control through the evolution of the human species through periods of scarcity. I mean, it's only recently that we've been able to produce a mechanized society that can provide for every single person on the planet, all of their needs and everything, and have us all live like kings. But in that sort of abundant society, people can't be controlled. And the people that are in control now know that they can't, you know, run their control ops if everyone is super satisfied. Like if everyone's sovereign and everyone has what they want, you know, could you imagine these elites coming out and saying, hey guys, let's all collectivize. People are like, no, that's cool. We have family. We've got relationships. We've got everything that we need. We don't need to collectivize. We just need to stay in this decentralized, you know, situation. And, you know, when I was looking back, I kept on finding like this artificial scarcity going back, you know, years and years and years. And what I realized is that, oh my God, ancient Egypt, which was a cult state and lasted for 5,000 years, it was based on the entire fact that one core group had access and a monopoly on water. Okay. And if you've got a monopoly on water, then your game strategy is to create a desert everywhere else. This is the script that the elites are playing. But instead of water, it's going to be health. It's going to be energy. It's going to be nutritious food. It's going to be good relationships. It's going to be whatever it is that you enjoy, they're going to take away, and they're only going to allow you to have it as long as you collectivize under their sort of socialist totalitarian rule.
And so they've become so large now, these companies, and I'm surprised to hear maybe that they just didn't buy up like Rossi's company or something like that, because it's like, I don't know, we covered the story a couple of months ago. It was showing over, I think it was over a decade period, Google had swallowed up like, I think it was something like 250 companies. It was a graph, I forget, it was New York Times showing it or something, but it was like, you would assume that this would trigger some kind of antitrust laws or something. They essentially bought up every competitor in the whole field, right? And it was like, there's no one out there that now can compete. Google is sucking up everything. And if they continue like this, they'll, as they have arrived at now, they're dominating everything, every field.
Yeah, you know, and when you go as an employee, they're like, oh, you're not going to compete against anything that Google's got their finger in. And I was like, I looked at that, you know, and I first signed one in 2008 and I was like, oh, that's cool. Google's only, you know, invested in these core technologies. But when I came back to the company in 2013 and signed on for a second time, I was like, wow, Google has something in everything. They are really sort of this oversized company that competes in every single space out there. Like they're a drug company, they're a mapping company, they provide, you know, services for the military industrial complex. They're a search company. I mean, they've got everything that's out there. They've got a hand in touching it. And so really, this sets up a perfect storm, because now they can buy up any company, and because they control 90% of the search traffic, they can start manipulating the search results so that their personal projects can get to the top of the
exactly.
list.
Exactly. Yep. They can. This is the thing. See, it's not only just about control. It's not only just about, having this power and influence. It's about the fact that you can implement mechanisms that ensures you and the companies that you own that they're going to stay at the top ever, right? If yep. you have a monopoly on information dissemination, which is essentially what they're founded on, right? It's just, but this idea too that we also then people who use Google, their product, it's scary to think of it that we rely on them. For example, let's say you search for a pediatrician in your area or something, right? We put our trust in the fact that Google is going to give us the utmost best results, right? So that we can, in this case, if our son or daughter is sick or something, or something has happened, right? But the fact is, they could rank other people in the area over something, or for whatever reason, or someone has bought that spot, or you know what I mean? But this is how it operates on every single level.
This is what's happening. There's a paper that I've written that is going to be published here by one of the major alternative news sites. And what I'm going into is this thing called an expertise, authoritativeness, and trustworthy score. And what has happened is Google has an army of individuals that they pay that take a website, and what they do is that they do a search and see what Wikipedia has to say about this website. If Wikipedia lists this website as a conspiracy website, as having someone that's a hate monger, then what happens is that this results in a lowering of the score for your website. So somebody will come to me and they're like, why is my website like being deranked? And I'm like, well, what does Wikipedia have to say about it? And they're like, oh, Wikipedia is slandering me. And it's like, no, it's not just slandering you. You're getting deranked because of what Wikipedia is having to say about you guys. Like, what is Henrik? What does Wikipedia have to say about Red Ice?
Lies.
About you.
It's about lies. It's all lies. We're white supremacists. We're racists. We're not neo Nazis. And it's what's interesting with it is that those profiles that have ended up on Wikipedia have essentially been built by opinion pieces in other smear rags like Huffington Post, The Daily Beast, the occasional maybe BBC or CNN piece or something like that. But those are literally opinion pieces who disagree with our politics. They use skewed, misconstrued information, misquotes. They don't reference or source what they actually say or where we have said these supposed things, right? But regardless, that's how you realize that's how they formulate reality now. Opinion pieces that are on the inside of journalists write these pieces. That ends up as the sources on Wikipedia, despite the original articles don't have any sources or points to anything direct, like where was this said? And you realize it's just a bunch of lies, and this is how they play the game. And we can't even edit, right? We actually know, have intricate, truthful information. Locked out.
Of your Wikipedia article.
Yep, that's right.
It's unbelievable. So they're using this as slander laundering operation, and it becomes, you know, injected into what is considered authoritative or trustworthy. And then Google's using this in order to give justification to derank every single thing that you're operating with.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And they're saying, oh, well, should we ban Red Ice? Well, Wikipedia is saying that this place is, you know, filled with white supremacists. And so, you know, you don't get a chance to, you know, appeal that decision.
No, or have my say or input or fight back against it, you know. No.
Right. You're getting a secret trial, which you don't know about, and which you don't get representation, which you don't get to face your accuser.
That's right.
And then, boom, your page goes offline.
Yeah. It's amazing that this, you know, people talk about China, they talk about the social credit score, and we should, and there are good, decent warnings in there. But the fact is, we already have that. It's already in place. It's called, it's the co-joint efforts of all these companies and all those activists inside of those companies that have come together. They have created their version of what they want reality to be, and everyone who doesn't conform to that has outside ideas or criticize that system, they are on the blacklist, essentially.
You know, at least with China, they have the audacity to tell their subjects that they're going to have the social credit score rolled out on them.
Yeah.
In the United States and in Europe, they won't tell us that they're installing a social credit system.
Here's the article. Report, America has a social credit system much like China, but it was built by Silicon Valley and not by the government, right?
That's right.
And then you realize, though, that these Silicon Valley companies, they are given an absurdly large amount of subsidies every year. Here's one article. Google, Tesla, Apple, Facebook raking massive subsidies, reports. They were getting as much money as some cities get in America. In other words, it's the taxpayer, Zach, that's footing the bill for a lot of these things. Then we can't have a say in it. And in addition, we need to go over these very basic, basic points here. But in addition, of course, they do get special protection under Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, right? Which makes them, this is the thing. This is the thing that makes me most angry. It's that they're doing both of these things at the same time, right? They're both, they have the protection of a platform, but they're operating as a publisher, as a biased meddling publisher, just like any newspaper out there that says, we're going to put this on the front page. It's not going to be, you know, whatever drives up the results is what end up on the trending page and stuff like that. No, that's all managed and controlled. So they get protection by the government saying, no, you, like, if someone posts something bad, it's not on you, it's on that user, right? Okay, fine. And they get all that money, and then they still operate as a damn publisher. It infuriates me. And I don't know why. I've heard Ted Cruz speak up against it. I just saw on the clip there. But nothing is happening because it's swing door politics. A lot of Silicon Valley people, they've gone in back and forth into politics as well, right? What do you think?
And their effective tax rate is near zero because what they've done is they've created an entity, a straw man that's outside of the United States. I think it's in Ireland, and what they do is that for any of the profits that they would have had that year, they calculate they actually make up a bill. They invoice themselves, and they're able to transfer all of their profits across the United States into Ireland, and then they're able to take that into their company as profits with a very, very low Irish tax rate.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
This is how they're able to do it. And I know this because I helped them do it in a very small way. I created a patent during my time at Google Earth, and they said, and what happened is that they had sort of like a bounty. As an engineer, you could take anything that you created and make a patent out of it, and then they would pay you like $3,000. And I knew some people that were making one patent a day. You can imagine how much money in bonuses that they got for that year. And I didn't realize what it was at the time. I thought that they were going to use it as a way to shake down other people. But by surprise, my patent was never used to shake down everyone. I believe that the patent was used to create an invoice where Google would pay themselves across the country and avoid, you know, any tax liability on their profits. You know, and so it's like,
interesting.
You know, Google's paying zero for its corporate tax rate,
you know,
and I was getting taxed at 50% of my income.
Wow. 50. That's incredible. So they have gotten all this power. They've gotten to the position where they are with the help of the government. There's an interface, of course, with the government. And again, with the frustrating aspect for me about this is that there's so many conservatives, especially because they have suffered censorship, and this has been denied. We can even show some of their headlines, right? But like this, you know, conservatives cry censorship after YouTube rolls out new anti-extremism policy. It's like, while conservatives have been discriminated against, we have been banned, shadow banned, and all this stuff. Here's another one. Evidence contradicts right-wing narrative of tech censorship and bias. Here's the Antifa outlet, The Daily Beast, saying, conservatives aren't being censored. They dominate online. Well, we dominated for a while because people wanted to hear those perspectives and they thought it was interesting. Now we don't because they have worked against us. But so all these conservatives know about this stuff, and yet we see nothing move. There's no action being made. What, is Google too powerful? What do you think is the root of that?
Yeah, I think they're really powerful, but I think that gears of justice, you know, grind slowly, but they have a lot of inertia. So I think that there's a lot of stuff happening. There was a report that 51 state attorney generals, so that included most of the states and a few territories, had gotten together and filed a class action antitrust probe. I don't know if it was a class action, but it was an antitrust probe that they did together to sort of open up Google. And right now you are seeing Facebook go through something similar, and they're screaming because they don't want all of their information being leaked out to the general public. They don't want to, you know, have it, this information out.
I saw you tweet. Is this what you're talking about? Were you tweeting about today?
Yeah. And then stuff like this happens, right? So 4,000 pages of Facebook documents just got leaked to the public. And they don't know who the leaker is, but it was someone that was working on this court case.
Nice.
And
well done, sir, whoever you are.
Yeah, our hat's off to you.
Yeah.
And more of this stuff is sort of coming. And what people need to realize is Facebook and Google.
It's sort of like
where the music industry was with the invention of Napster. Like, we saw all these grandmas being sued and everyone was like, what's happening? And then all of a sudden the music industry collapsed. Why was the music industry freaking out? Because their whole business was about to be destroyed. Well, I believe that Google's business is about to be destroyed too. And the reason why I think that is because I believe that a lot of their revenue is actually not done by ads. It's actually done by selling your data and my data to the intelligence agencies around the world, in a concept I call surveillance capitalism. And this is something that's kind of known as an open secret within Silicon Valley. There's a saying of, if the product is free, then you are the product. And what that means is all of the clicks, all of your emails, all of the things that you search for in Google are being categorized, stored under a shadow profile of yourself, and then being sold to anyone that wants to buy it. And we saw that this has already happened with Facebook. You know, they did a deal with France where they gave them access to everyone's social media profile. You know, so now everyone's history of what they've said can now be looked at the government. And I believe that this has already happened with Google. And the question is, if this is already happening, then how is this money being brought back into the company? Because I've never seen a financial disclosure stated where they said, oh, and we made this many billions of dollars selling all of your data to, you know, country X, Y, and Z. You know, that could be like Britain, China, and France. And it doesn't come out as a line item on their financial disclosure. So how does it come back in if they're doing this? And that's where the real fun gets, because that's where money laundering comes into the equation. So, you know, if you consider that data model, that business model is about to die. And the reason why I say that's about to die is because I don't think that the United States is going to allow China's intelligence agencies to buy our data, our real-time location data, and just assassinate people within the United States, especially if we don't have the same ability to do on the Chinese. As a result of this inherent contradiction, I believe that the United States patriots are going to introduce new legislation in the coming 4 years that will essentially give data protection. It will stop Google from being able to just sell your data on the open markets. And those new laws will essentially slam shut a large percentage of the revenue for these social media giants. When this happens, I believe that Google's revenue stream is finished. And if you look at the way that Google is behaving now, what they look like is a desperate, desperate cat that's cornered, and the claws are coming out and they're giving it all that they can. And, you know, what I believe will happen is that we're going to have major tectonic shifts. There is a cultural movement and a political movement and a legal movement to prevent Google from controlling the whole information landscape. And I believe that Google's making this position because they're really you know, fighting the last fight right now, and they can't let the culture and the demographics vote in a way that's going to contradict their agenda. I think that it's inevitable. I think that it's a force of nature. I think that, you know, God wills his people to be free, and this effort to lock down humanity under a totalitarian state is an old play. It's going to fail like it's failed in all the other times, and the sovereignty of humanity is going to, you know, and thrust us into a new age of renaissance, an age of renaissance where we have free energy, that we have healthy food, and we have the full information on how to live a healthy and prosperous life, you know? And so
I think you're right. I hope you're right. I was going to say, you know, but they're not going to go down, of course, easily these companies. No. And again, I just want to show this because I think that that's very important, that what you just mentioned. Exclusive and a world first, Facebook has agreed to hand over the identification data of French users suspected, not like found guilty or whatever, suspected of hate speech on its platform to judges, France's Minister for Digital Affairs said on Tuesday. Now, this is back in June, but this is what it's all about, right? It's about data. It's also about, I think it's almost about drawing people out of the woodwork who would speak up against anything that's being done to them or to their nation or things they don't agree with, right? And as soon as you voice your opinions, and be that comments or, you know, you write something or whatever, they can collect that on you and build a profile on you and say, you're a dangerous individual in this new society we're building. We're going to have to re-educate you or something, right? We have to restrict your ability to communicate or something.
I mean, and it's like everything that the media was warning us that the NSA would do in the worst case scenario. And now the worst case scenario is happening. And they're just sort of like telling us, like, oh yeah, matter of factly, oh yeah, in a world first, Facebook is going to introduce data to your government about the things that you say online, and they announce it like it's a good thing.
Yeah, right, know? Exactly. But they're bought so many companies, and there's so many things that Google could fall on potentially if this was opened up. Now, I believe what you referenced earlier is I saw a press conference. It was all these different. District attorneys from different states that have come together and sued. Was that what you mentioned before?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
That's very interesting. I mean, that seems very plausible. I'll see if I can find the article for that later, the headline for that. But from antitrust to obvious meddling in the elections, getting involved. And again, despite getting help from the government, they are caught red-handed with their hand in the cookie jar of saying, like, well, yeah, we've tried to do this to make sure that another Trump situation doesn't happen. All of this is out in the open now, and Trump better
act. And
they've act.
Perjured themselves so many times, you know. It's just like they're telling Congress, oh, we don't use blacklists. And I'm sitting there as a full-time employee going, wait a minute, we don't use blacklists.
They lie.
And then I type. And, you know, I literally get a 42-page document called YouTube Query Blacklist. Like, it actually had blacklist in the name of the blacklist.
Yeah.
And they're telling Congress, oh, yeah, we don't use blacklists or any politically motivated censorship. And it's just like the in-your-face lying that these people are doing is just – it's intolerable.
Yeah. How can they – I mean, that's – they've committed perjury multiple times. After being drawn in front of hearings and stuff, I mean, again, I could show also just this, but this was that I mentioned in the beginning. Brin and all the higher-ups in Google talking after the election. They were emotionally distraught. This was like being kicked in the gut just because Trump won. And then they go on to talk about how, well, we're going to do what's right, and we're going to make sure we use everything we can to stop this and turn things around in the right direction. There was something wrong when a nation wants to rise up and take care of itself again. It's unbelievable, these people.
Right. They're so sad that Hillary lost.
Yeah.
Like,
I know.
It's like, what do you think about, like, what Hillary's done, and that this is the person that's a travesty that she didn't win? It's like,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But this is the issue. This is what we're fighting with regards to Google or Alphabet, of course, which the parent company is named right now. I think that they're at some point they're going to piss off enough people. And as you say, there is a number of lawsuits already in the works. Something's going to happen, which is going to cause these guys to fall. But again, as I said, they're not going to go down easy. Are they the biggest company in the world right now? I think it's close to it, right? Aren't they?
They're like, I think it's like them and Apple are near $1 trillion market cap. So yeah, they're one of the largest companies in the world. There's probably trusts that are bigger than them, but in the size of its of a corporate entity, I think that Google is one of the largest for now. But we'll see what happens in the next couple of years.
Do you want to tell us a little bit more in terms of like how you think that that will pan out with the AI, the artificial systems that they're building, and how they'll be able to restrict access to information, and what are you hoping for in terms of getting us out of that situation? Would it not be sufficient at this stage for people to just walk away from Google and stop using
them? Yeah, I mean that's the Google detox, which is getting off of Google products, is one sort of aspect of this activist action that I'm doing. Another thing is that if I bring attention to this machine learning fairness, which is what I'm doing, then what's happening is that not only am I educating the public, but I'm also educating the employees of Google, because they have no idea that this is happening. And a lot of them are what I would call sort of asleep liberals. They're liberal fundamentally. They believe in the individual and the ability for them to do what they want. They're kind of like libertarians in a lot of ways. And they don't like what Google's doing, but they don't have enough evidence that they see that there's really a conspiracy. Well, now with the information that I've released, they can see exactly what Google's doing. They can see that Google has committed sedition. And what they're going to realize is that if they go along with this, then they might be caught up in a legal action that they didn't sign up for, because Google is committing election meddling. They've been caught for it. They've been tried for it internationally. And if someone is on the inside and they feel that they are committing election fraud, then they now have the choice to blow the whistle. And Google knows that that's what's going on. And so part of this disclosure is to try to freeze the machine of censorship and make it harder operationally for the company to do its censorship. And when it does do its censorship, the public is now like primed. So we're all going to talk about it at the same time. And so it's really to put this microscope. And my goal with that is to give the conservatives and the patriots that are trying to make America first and not a country that's for sale by foreign adversaries, I want to give them one last shot so that Google wouldn't rig the election in 2020. And we've already caught them trying to rig the election. They shut off Tulsi Gabbard's ad account.
Exactly. I remember that. Amazing. Amazing.
It's amazing.
And they're still just out there operating. They should be like, nope, shut it down now. Like, get these people out of any position of influence.
Well, there should be a raid and a perp walk, and someone should go down for something like that.
Yeah, so
There should be a full investigation, and they just turn around and they don't even get a slap on the wrist. They're allowed to lie to Congress, and they're able to go forward.
Yeah, and they don't even show up, as I showed in that earlier. Like, look at this one. I remember that a while ago. Google is a no-show at DC hearings, stoking anger in Congress. No Larry Page, no Sundar Pichai, just an empty chair, right? So they were even asked. Again, they received, look at the screenshot I showed there. 766 million since 2000, right? I mean, that's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. And who's paying that? We, the users of Google. Yeah. And we say, well, all these free products, and it's like, fuck that. Sorry for the bad language, but it's like they're getting special protection. They're getting hundreds of millions of dollars from U.S. taxpayers, and they can't even uphold U.S. law. They can't recognize the First Amendment, and these fuckers, they can't even recognize the human charter of human rights, the detail free speech in it. They're operating in every single country that has signed this charter and said, yeah, we agree with the human rights issue that that the UN has outlined, but they can't uphold it. It's disgusting.
And they were funded by InQtel, which was a venture capital firm of money coming from us, we the people.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, this is an artificially created, you know, entity, and they have, you know, they've built themselves off our model of prosperity, off the money of we the people, and then they don't have an election. There's an election they don't like, so they slam the door shut and lock us all down into a totalitarian state.
It's amazing.
It's like, it's amazing. I would have called someone a conspiracy nut if they'd come up and told me that this was what Google was going to do 4 years ago. I would have said, you're crazy. That would never happen. I work for a company that's totally legitimate and great and wonderful, and they even have in their constitution, don't be evil and organize the world's information and make it universally accessible. I would have told them 4 years ago, are you telling me that that was a total lie, that they're going to sacrifice everything in that mission statement that they give when they went IPO in order to satisfy, you know, a political agenda that supports Hillary Clinton? Like, you couldn't make a fiction story, you know, that would have been more laughable than that. But that's actually what happened. And, you know, it's like we're no longer living in, you know, something that is, you know, something to be taken seriously by an intellectual.
They dropped that clause, by the way, Zach, as you know. Don't be evil. They dropped that.
they dropped it, but they replaced it with do the right thing. And
no.
Right?
Oh,
and
wow.
Look when they did that. They did that in May of 2018. And you know what happened a month before that? There was a shooter by the name of Nassim.
I remember it.
She came to came to my headquarters, 901 Cherry Avenue, and opened fire at the lunch cafeteria and the patio outside.
And that was buried, that story. Imagine if that was a right winger that had showed up. Can you imagine what would have happened as a consequence of that?
Yeah. It's you know, they buried the story, and there's actually something more to that story that I don't want to talk about right here, but the story is not exactly what it seems. There's something darker about that.
Okay.
And it's staring you right in the face. So if people want to sort of dig into that and check it out, it's really freaky.
All right. Interesting. I showed that because I wanted to. I've hammered that a couple of times here recently. But the UN Declaration of Human Rights, these companies, they pride themselves on the social justice stuff and human rights and all that stuff. Right. And he does say, take it into consideration now, they're funded by the taxpayers. Yes, they obviously make money themselves, right? But there's a swing door politicians and people that work in Silicon Valley and the tech sector. They just go back and forth between these positions. They get special protection, all these things from the government, right? They get contracts from the government. The government uses them to live stream, to disseminate information, you know, all this kind of stuff. Article 19 says, and I quote here, everyone has the right to freedom of opinion and expression. This right includes freedom to hold opinions without interference and to seek, receive, and impart information and ideas through any media and regardless of frontiers, right? So that's what Google is about. It's to seek, receive, and impart information. That's the whole thing, right? So why can't they even uphold this when they operate in virtually every country around the world that has recognized and signed on, they've ratified this declaration?
Yeah, it's and where's the media on this? Like,
nowhere. No.
They don't care.
No.
It's like they talk about human rights and the will of the people and democracy until it doesn't produce the result that they want. Then all of a sudden they've got to change it all.
But they have gotten away with it, right? Because they call it hate speech. They've invented this new thing, which even the Supreme Court, of course, has ruled on. And they said, actually, it doesn't exist. There is no special, exception in the First Amendment to supposed hate speech, right? You remember that story? It was back in 2016, and they reaffirmed it again. And they said, it's irrelevant. It doesn't matter. It's essentially a situation where they now, whatever speech that they hate because they don't agree, they label that hate speech, and then they legitimize censoring people, silencing people, smearing people, and all the stuff that we've seen consequently.
Right, and it's the ADL and the SLPC that are driving
SPLC.
Most of this stuff.
Yeah, SPLC.
And I gave you a link. It was about the ADL and their video about how they're creating the ADL hate index.
Let me play that. I have let me just play this.
We work with Google on using AI to try to interrupt cyber hate before it happens.
Right. That's the head, current head, Jonathan Greenblatt from Greenblatt. The ADL that has a whole department that interfaces into YouTube. Here's let's pull this up because we weren't. This is the reason, of course, why Red Ice TV has been censored from YouTube. Now, we had our own little section on ADL's website. That whole hit piece, where they list every single channel that they want to have taken down, and a lot of these have already been smoked, right? And so they call us white supremacists. They call us anti-Semites without no sources, no references to where they can point to this stuff, right? Despite YouTube policy update, anti-Semitic white supremacist channels remain. This is back in August. And a lot of the people on here have consequently been censored, you know. So it's a small, fairly fringe. I mean, they have a lot of power, don't get me wrong. But it's a smaller group that has managed to get a foot in through the door into YouTube and now putting pressure on YouTube, demanding them to shut people down that they do not like, right? That's where we're at.
That's right. And I'm going to send you this video on Red Ice TV. I'm going to send you this video about the ADL and their online hate index because it sums up really nicely exactly what they're doing. I just send it to you now.
Here we go. Yeah, let's play this here. I think, this one is great. Let's play this one for people that haven't seen this.
Mm-hmm. ADL and the University of California at Berkeley's D-Lab have been working to develop a new approach to tackle online hate using the latest methods. The goal of the Online Hate Index is to help tech platforms better understand the growing amount of hate on social media and to use that information to address the problem. By combining artificial intelligence and machine learning with social science, the Online Hate Index will ultimately uncover and identify trends and patterns.
Pause right there. Go back.
Yeah. White rights. That's amazing.
We just completed our first hate group.
Let me just...
It's not just like a hate term. ADL. It's like... the largest hate term that the ADL is pushing.
Look at that. Like, if you believe that you have rights as a white person, yeah, that's the biggest issue. It's clear what the agenda is here. I mean, there's no secret, right? They are completely open with it. Men's rights. You see that?
First Amendment censorship.
Yeah, if you think there's censorship or First Amendment violations. Oh, hate comments count by subreddit. Wow, it's amazing. 9/11 truth. Yeah, so this is what they believe. This is what they think, right? So we know that the agenda is clear. They are gunning for people that are opposing things which they want to make sure that they can steamroll over us, essentially, right? I mean, we've talked about this for actually quite a few years now of what the agenda is with all of this. But the point is now that interfaces now with the biggest companies on the world and with the amount of power that they have, with the amount of influence that they have. Do you want to tell us a little bit about Stop Bit Burning? I remember the note here. I just saw that.
Yeah. So Stop Bit Burning is a class action lawsuit that is getting really big now. I'm part of it as well. And people that are content creators and people that are getting their businesses censored are looking for an outlet to pour their energy into, you know, making effective change on the judicial front. So if you've been, you know, demonetized, censored, if your channel has been taken off, then you need to join this class action lawsuit called Stop Bit Burning. And for those that are trying to figure out what that means, it's like, you know, like book burning was done by the Nazis. And then the new tech fascists of today are not burning books, they're burning bits. And so you can go to stopbitburning.com, join the weekly meeting. They have a conference call and they talk about like what the new updates are. And so I encourage everyone that is tired of the censorship to check out stopbitburning.com.
All right, great. Yeah, that's something to, of course, keep an eye on because it's important.
In fact, play the video. Could you play the video there?
Sure.
The modern era has brought new technology that has changed the way that information is shared. As these new technologies have evolved, so too have the ways that they're being censored. In the past, if people didn't like an author, they would burn their books. Today, we see a different form of book burning called bit burning. It is the censorship of digital information. Bit burning is shadow banning, deboosting, demonetizing, deplatforming, and outright banning. The good news is we can stop bit burning with a where we go one, we go all strategy, fighting as an international collective and pushing back on the big tech that is selectively silencing our free speech. If you are the target of digital censorship or just fed up with seeing it happen to others, join the Stop Bit Burning movement and fight back. StopBitBurning.com, where free speech takes a stand.
All right, great. Yeah, we need everything that we can do, all fronts, all people going together, everyone pulling in the same direction. And again, it's not about agreeing with the people that you get involved in. It's about agreeing on the fact that we should be able to have a platform to speak on, especially by platforms that have not just been built by private company, because that's what we hear now, right? That's just, they can do whatever they want. They're a private company. And as we've proven now, that's not true. Funded seed money from taxpayers, subsidies, protection by the government, and then they all do all this stuff. So, yeah, good initiative.
Yeah. So I hope that brings value to people, because it's really important that we all work together, because that's what these elite oligarchs fear the most. The people of the world outnumber them 10,000 to one. And the more we can bring attention, the more exposure we can give to this elite power group, and the more powerful we, the people, become. And so I'm asking everyone who's watching to help support me and help support the Stop Bit Burning campaign and to raise awareness. I also want to mention that I've got a Twitter page called twitter.com/perpetualmaniac. Yes, that's my username, perpetualmaniac. And I am fighting against this deep state. I'm fighting for the uncensorship and for the freedom of you, the content creator, in whatever capacity that is, whether it's on Twitter, whether it's on YouTube, whether it's on the internet, whether you create a business and you want to be ranked fairly. Like, this is something that we all need to come together on. And we need to support each other, because this censorship is against the First Amendment. It's anti-American. And freedom is not something that is just passed lazily on with apathy to the next generation. It's something that needs to be fought for, which is the reason why that I've sacrificed everything to join this fight. Because if we can't have a free market of ideas, then we can't have a free market of commerce. And what it means to be America will be eroded away by this, you know, conspiracy of the globalists to put their totalitarian, you know, system of control across the world. And we can fight against that. We are fighting against that. And the good news is that we're winning. So, you know.
Yeah. Zach, just before, we're going to let you go here in just a few minutes, but also people out there need to realize that it's not going to stop. They're not going to be happy. Like, the people that deplatform now, it's not that they're going to just say one day, like, all right, well, we've got the people that we wanted. No, they got the taste of blood now. There's blood in the water, and it's like, you know what? Let's take this people, this organization, that group, these guys, we don't like them. And you more than minimize it and cut those edges off, than what is absolutely just in the middle and center of those, you know, fringes that they've started to cut on. And of course, we know that they cut more on the right than they do on the left, obviously. Occasionally it happens, but very rarely on the left. But the point is, they're not going to be happy with that. They're going to say there's always going to be a new extreme, and that's whatever edge that, you know, you happen to be on. If all the ones to the right of you have fallen off or been chipped off, broken off by the censorship and the banning. So it's not going to be enough, Zach. It's just, they don't know when to stop. It's never going to stop. Everyone's going to be a thorn in their side eventually. Anyone who speaks up against them, essentially. They just want obedience and you laying down, rolling over, and playing dead at their command. That's what they want.
And they've drastically underestimated the will of the American public. We just will not tolerate that. So,
yeah. All right, great work, man. Anything else here at the end you want to give out? Yeah, give them your Twitter again. Is that your Medium page I'm showing there? I got to search for that.
Yeah, that's my Medium page, okay. Zach Voorhees. Yeah. You can see some of my articles that I posted about this. And again, your audience can follow me by going to twitter.com/perpetualmaniac.
Yeah, We'll have that linked up as well, of course. Well, thank you for your work. Thank you for speaking out and doing what you're doing. We need guys like you on the inside. So thank you for doing that. And we kind of forgot to mention it, frankly, but just quickly right here at the end, of course, what happened to you as well, it was despicable because Google sent, they sent the cops on you. Like, you remember this stuff? They mm-hmm. What was it? They reported that you were probably a dangerous individual or what? Just quickly, what happened
with
that?
Yeah, I got red flagged by Google and the cops came to my house and I didn't answer the door. So they called in a bomb threat and I eventually surrendered and came out of my house with my hands up. And then all they wanted to do is ask me questions about whether I was going to commit suicide. So stupid.
Well, it shows what Google did. The people at Google, once someone spoke up against them, you know?
Yeah, they did that right before I disclosed all the 950 pages. So, but they couldn't stop it. I did it anyways. And luckily I'm still allowed to talk about it. So.
Well, yeah, that's not a laughing matter and nothing people should scoff at because those things, they definitely happen. More often than people know. If you have insiders, people want to speak up and expose certain things. So, yeah, stay safe out there, man. And thank you so much again for coming on. We got to have you back again. We'll do an update maybe in a while. We'll reach out to you. But for now, thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank you, Henrik. It's been a pleasure to be on your show.
All right, that's Zach Voorhees. Thank you so much for joining us today, ladies and gentlemen. Great having you with us. I hope you enjoyed the show. Much more is coming up. Flashback Friday, Weekend Warrior exclusive at redicemembers.com. If you like what we do, sign up for a membership. You get access to exclusive material, and it helps us to fight back against the censorship and the people that are trying to shut us down, shut down this media company and our ability to reach more people, to spread the good word that it is okay to be white. You don't have to feel shame, you don't have to feel guilt, and in fact, we should expose the discrimination, the blatant racism against white people. As of course, one of the things we're trying to hammer away at here on the show, that it's okay to be of European descent and feel good about who you are. Of course, we cover a lot of other things as well if you're new to the show. We talk about globalism, we talk about nationalism, we talk about getting out of the situation that the elites are trying to put us in. Check out the archives, redice.tv, and of course, as I said, redicemembers.com. Get a membership. Find us on bitchute.com/redicetv. We're on Facebook at Red Ice Creations, Twitter, Red Ice TV. And we also have links down below to Gab and Instagram, Minds, and a number of other places as well. But guys, we'll be back with more soon. In the meantime, thank you for watching. Thank you for your support. And we'll see you soon.
The globalists are replacing you, and they are rejoicing. Join the true resistance. Red Ice TV. Watch the full show at redicemembers.com. Sign up now.
On October 17th, YouTube deleted our channel, Red Ice TV, and a week later, Red Ice Media, our backup. We had no strikes at the time on either. YouTube never sent us an email, they did not get back to us regarding our appeal, and despite thousands of people writing Team YouTube, there has been zero communication from them after we were thrown off the video publisher's website. Luckily, nothing has been lost. Everything is still available on redice.tv and redicemembers.com, together with all our members' exclusive content. Make sure you get a subscription and support us. A lot of our recent videos and shows were automatically backed up on our BitChute channel. Subscribe to us there, bitchute.com/redicetv. More recent shows are embedded via BitChute on redice.tv, and we have always hosted our own MP3s on the website, the podcast version of the show. We have RSS feeds both for the radio show, the interviews, and a separate RSS feed for the videos posted on our website. Subscribe to both of these feeds to get the latest content, and this is a great way of getting a notification as well as soon as new shows and videos are available. We are in the process of uploading older shows to our BitChute channel now. We will go back and update shows on redice.tv that previously was linked back to our now censored YouTube channel. Subscribe to our BitChute channel, bitchute.com/redicetv. We are rebuilding our subscriber base with an already large audience over there. Join the 22,000 that have already subscribed to our BitChute channel. We are also uploading all our videos to our Facebook page, facebook.com/redicecreations. Just search for Red Ice on Facebook. When we live stream, we multi-stream both to Twitter and Facebook, but more importantly, dlive.tv/redicetv. Get the DLive app, follow us there, and you'll get notifications when we go live. They have super chats incorporated on the platform as well. Thousands have joined us on DLive already, and that's a great option for live streaming. If you want notifications for any of our content, make sure you join our Telegram group. Go to t.me/redicetv and enable notifications. You can get the Telegram app for your phone or your computer. It's nice and secure as well. Notifications goes on Telegram every time something new is available from Red Ice or other important updates that we have. In addition, make sure that you follow us on twitter.com/redicetv, gab.com/redicetv, minds.com/redicetv, and instagram.com/redicemedia. Help spread the word about our videos and shows. Share links, post it in comments, tell friends, family, coworkers. We lost access to 333,000 subscribers on YouTube, but we'll rebuild the audience on new and better platforms that don't censor and accepts politically diverse opinions. YouTube will be outcompeted by platforms that simply can uphold US law, recognize the First Amendment, but also the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights. The Supreme Court already ruled that there is no so-called hate speech exception to the First Amendment. Publishers like YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and Google use the hate speech excuse, this clause, to silence dissident political views that they don't agree with, since they are biased political publishers that meddle in the election process and admittedly now has shown through leaked footage and documents that they want to sway public opinion by controlling what speech they allow or don't allow on their websites, even though they are granted special protection under the Communications Decency Act, Section 230, by the United States government. This means they should not be allowed to operate as a publisher like they do now. They should be a neutral platform, but time and time again, we have seen that they are not. All we ask is that these companies uphold United States law. Don't break the law by calling for violence, which we never did. And then these publishers should accept everything else that is protected under the First Amendment, since they are based in and were founded in the United States of America. They also receive corporate welfare, massive subsidies from the US government. This is taxpayer money, in other words. Considering their special protection status granted to them by the government under Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, they should recognize free speech. And the US Supreme Court have already ruled that so-called hate speech is free speech. RedIce.tv, RedIceMembers.com. Visit our websites. A lot of great new updates in the work for both websites. Thank you for watching, and thank you for your support.